Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Top Order podcast. It's Cricket World Cup still, if you have been under a rock for a little while. We're going to be talking about England-Netherlands in match day 40 of this ICC Men's Cricket World Cup. All coming up on the Top Order podcast. Stay tuned. So, Lippy, we were just saying before we came on air, you and I haven't been on too often together. I certainly haven't been on, I think, at all with an England win. So, this feels a little bit weird. We'll obviously get into, I think, the course of the game. I could talk about England all day. So keen to get your views on the performance last night in Pune. England, look, I guess putting in the kind of performance I think we would have expected from them throughout the course of the tournament wasn't without its flaws, but certainly the scoreboard's actually a pretty good reflection of the way England, dominated the game really with the bat and then took regular wickets. Netherlands never really in the hunt, I don't think, throughout the course of the 87 or so overs that we saw. But yeah, your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, well, I'll firstly just echo, nice to be chatting with you this morning. Our schedules don't seem to have aligned throughout this World Cup, but very good to be on with you this morning. And I will take exception to one point you made about the comfortableness, I guess, of this win for England. I think that the margin, certainly, as you said, totally, I've been up sort of saying it throughout this whole World Cup. I thought England would not completely march through the tournament, but certainly be, right near the top of the table from the outset, leading and sort of walking into the semi-finals without too much trouble. That hasn't happened, and I guess the margin of victory certainly is one that we might have expected from England. But I would say at different points, it wasn't especially comfortable for England. They, Milan, we look right back at the start. Milan gets them off to a beautiful start, and we might talk a little bit more about him in a minute. But then, they go from 133 for one, I think it was, to 192 for six, and suddenly I'm sure all the England fans have kind of been sitting through this World Cup with gritted teeth and their hands over their eyes at various points in this tournament must have been thinking, oh no, we're in for another sort of bad day at the office here, because it really took something from Stokes and Wokes to sort of dig them out of that hole and get them up to a respectable total.
I probably look at it a slightly different way. I think you just read the score out. England did sort of stooped to 190 odd for six. They'd have still won with 13 runs to spare, even if they'd have been a little bit of a cheeky hat trick and a run out at that point. So I think regardless of that, in the context of this one game, it was a comprehensive win. In the context of the tournament, clearly they've been extremely poor, and I think a couple of individual performances, particularly with the bat, probably papering over some of those cracks. We've seen almost nothing from Johnny Bairstow throughout the course of the tournament. Joe Root, I think, is averaging somewhere around sort of 15 or 16 for the tournament. A couple of 50s early up. So I think he got 50s against Bangladesh and New Zealand and then nothing since. This is the kind of performance we expect from Ben Stokes. But again, I think we see really big performances from him. Punctuated probably with a little bit less consistency, to be honest. But then, Harry Brook has shown almost nothing. And the former Joss Butler, I know is a concern for him. He's come out and said that he wants to put that right in the West Indies in the white ball tour that follows this World Cup. Definitely not the kind of performance and wholehearted performance we've expected to see from England. But I think, what they did was they were relatively clinical. I certainly thought Milan at the top of the order batted really, really well. It was kind of just almost like a highlights package, that first sort of six or seven overs. When he got a loose ball, he put it away. Still some concerns for England. But, you've got to let us have a moment in the sun, Stu. Otherwise, we'll have to start talking about Duckworth Lewis.
Oh, geez, we don't want to start talking about that again. I think to stay negative slightly and then I'll move to the positive. The Joe Root one has really surprised me, I think, the most out of this tournament because he looked in such good touch in those first two games. Absolutely, like in that New Zealand game in particular, he looked like that only mistakes would get him out. And I guess maybe that, that's what happened today. He was batting, doing a decent job today and then nutmegs himself and gets out. And I guess it's no surprise, actually, if you go back and look, as you mentioned, Bairstow, very few runs, Butler struggled, Root has struggled. Those are, possibly the three most important batters in that England lineup, and they haven't scored enough runs in this tournament. So it's probably no surprise that, England's results have gone the way they are when you actually look at those stats. On Milan, though, that was, a great start. And I can't believe he didn't get out first ball. I don't quite know what happened there. Brilliant Yorker from Logan van Beek. And then it goes under the bat and somehow goes over the stumps. I'm sure I've watched that three or four times back and still can't quite figure out what's happened. But from then on, I think it was next ball boundary, next ball boundary, next ball boundary. And, I think the timing is the thing that stands out for me when I watch Dava Milana. It's sort of, I don't know, I know he's been world T20 number one batter in the world. And when I watch him, sometimes I think, he's going to get out in a minute. But then he doesn't, and he just keeps hitting boundary after boundary. And, like you say, it becomes a highlights package. And suddenly he's scoring a lot quicker than you think he might be with the way he's playing his shots because when he times it, it goes for four. And, it was really, really classy from him. And to get them up to 130-odd for one, it seemed like they were set for a huge score, which they obviously did end up getting. But, the struggles in between there. We've talked a bit about those struggles. Do you want to elaborate a bit more on that Stokes and Wokes partnership? Because, it was very good, particularly that last 10 overs. And a few little chances for Ben Stokes at various points in his innings, but once he starts getting that leg side, those leg side shots and the power that he displays, it's pretty impressive to watch.
Yeah, well, look, I guess the main thing I want to say about that is that is really the game plan England have wanted to enact throughout the course of this tournament. It's the way that we've been playing our one day cricket for not just this cycle really, but ever since 2015 really. So kind of 6 or 7 years of trying to do what we've do what we've done here, which is go really hard at the top. Obviously, the personnel's changed a little bit in that respect. We've had Jason Roy, Alex Hales, David Milan, Johnny Bear, so all kind of in those roles, but setting a platform for these guys, and I think allowing Stokes to do what he does so well, which is I think understand the situation. He can look scratchy at times, and then when it's time for him to explode, he just seems to find a gear that very few players have. And we saw a little bit of that last night. Six sixes, I think, in his innings. And then from a Chris Wokes perspective, again, he's probably, I think, a little bit underrated as a certainly. You describe him as a bowling all rounder. But his quality with the bat, particularly in one day cricket, is pretty decent. He's got a test match 100 as well. And so he's no mug. He played a fantastic role. And again, very, very similar to Milan in that he's a very, very natural timer of the cricket ball. Plays pretty decent and orthodox cricket shots. There's not too much funky about about Chris Woakes, but when he, you know, when he times the ball and when he gets his pull shot away, it certainly stays hit. So, look, as you alluded to, it was important, I think, that they put a partnership together to put, you know, a really imposing total on the board. And, yeah, look, you know, we've not done it too many times at the tournament. So, very nice to see. What the future holds for both those two, I think, is, yeah, probably the question mark after the tournament. Woakes, yeah, certainly from an age perspective, I don't think it's another one-day international World Cup. And Stokes will be off for a knee surgery in a week or so's time. And you've got to wonder, you know, with his international one-day retirement being reversed for this tournament, you would expect that that might come back into force now. And, you know, there'll be some of these younger guys that get a go as we move forward into the next, the next little cycle.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that a bit later, and but now that we're here, we may as well ask you this before the. Before we move into the England bowling and Netherlands batting and things, I'm fascinated to see what happens with this England white ball setup, because obviously we've just seen the central contracts come out, and, you know, aside from David Willey, I think, isn't it, everyone that I suppose was up for one has got one. Does you sort of normally see with 50 over cups traditionally, maybe, you know, maybe not as much now, but traditionally that was kind of the target for each side. They would work towards, you know, your four-year cycle, and you're working towards the World Cup. And then after that, you start to look long-term. You start to look towards that next World Cup, and maybe that's when you start to blood players. And, you know, a lot has been made of this England side throughout this tournament about their ages and all of that kind of stuff. Do you think that we're going to sort of immediately see that cycle change, or are we going to, because of the T20 World Cup set up now with, you know, tournaments every year, we've got the T20 World Cup, then there's Champions Trophy, which, you know, all the qualification talk that we've had in this World Cup. Do you think it's going to be immediate, or is it going to be a bit of a gradual process with all of these guys sort of slowly phasing out?
Yeah, look, I think it's probably going to be, in my view, I think it's going to be a gradual thing, because, as you said, we have got that T20 World Cup coming up. I think they'll have to look actually at the personnel that they, you know, that they might have put at least in, you know, solid pencil into that T20 squad. I'm thinking of the likes of Adil Rashid, of Moeen Ali, probably of Chris Woakes. There's a number of people we could probably talk about as to whether or not, you know, before this one day World Cup, they'd have almost been on the, you know, on the flight manifest for that T20 World Cup. I think there'll be a few that retire now. I think what's complicated this for the ECB is that they brought forward the contract award cycle. So it wasn't due until next year. But I think with the threat of obviously losing potentially a couple of, you know, big name players to, you know, to multi-year franchise deals potentially, I think they wanted to do something to bring that cycle forward. So, you know, they've negotiated this. And my understanding is it was done and dusted before the World Cup. So, you know, David Willey, for example, knew he wasn't getting one before he got on the plane to India. It didn't come out in the middle of the tournament. It was announced in the middle of the tournament. And regardless of that, I think it's, you know, there's going to be a question mark around the timing of that and whether it's affected the performance for England in this World Cup. And then I think the other thing that falls into it is there's obviously a set of criteria for how these contracts are awarded, you know, and therefore some of these players, you know, deserve the contract over, you know, their performances of the last several years. But yeah, to answer your question more broadly, I think we will see probably closer to an overhaul than we will incremental change. But I don't think they're going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And then I think the other component is just going to be some individual players and their decisions on what they want to do. Joe Root's not really been a fixture of that T20 side. He's long talked about the fact that he would like to be, is this the time where he says, do you know what, I'm going to play test cricket and then, you know, rake in some money from the franchise stuff and play some T20 franchise cricket? Ben Stokes, similarly, you know, how's his knee going to hold up and what does he want to do in the final years of his career? Milan probably goes on and plays the T20 World Cup based on his form. But again, age not on his side in the long term. I think he's 36. So, look, I definitely think there'll be some significant change. But I also don't think, and I'm pretty clear on this in my mind, yes, we've had an absolutely shocking 6 weeks in India, but these guys haven't become terrible cricketers overnight. There is an opportunity, I think, for a core group of them to actually still play part in that T20 World Cup defence. And I actually think, you know, in hindsight, if I try and put my finger on where this has all gone wrong, I just think that it's a bridge too far for these guys who are playing 50-over cricket in the same fashion as they have for the last 6 years. T20 cricket, I still think that it will be up there if we can find a little bit of form and a little bit of confidence going into that tournament with a not dissimilar group. But yeah.
No, it's a good summary. And I certainly didn't know that about the contracting, sort of how that's all worked. And I'm sure I will fall into the same trap, and maybe it won't be a trap, as you say, when this T20 World Cup rolls around, and that I'll look down that lineup and see Bairstow and Butler and, you know, all the power in their lineup and think, gee, you know, you don't want to be facing them as an opposition side. So yeah, look, if those guys are there, I'm sure they'll give the T20 World Cup a good shout. We should talk a little bit about the Netherlands probably as we move through this podcast. It wasn't a great start for them with the bat, 13 for 2. And I think the big moment for them that stands out the most is suddenly Barisi and Engelbrecht have built a partnership and they've got it to 67 for 2 and another sort of senseless run out. And I think last time I was talking to Baldy about the Netherlands, he mentioned, I think, used the word unforced errors. And that sort of stands out to me, you know, throughout their whole tournament. They've shown that they are no easy beats in this tournament. They'll be disappointed with a couple of their days out, certainly against Australia and probably this one when they look back at it in terms of the way this game kind of played out and that they could have been chasing a much smaller score and even the way they built their innings in this game. But I think the runouts and things will be the key factor that they look back during this World Cup and go, gee, we've just got to tighten those things up because we're a decent side. And the trouble is that it's made Champions Trophy qualification quite difficult for them now. This was a really important game. If they'd have won, they probably would have been, you know, in the box seat to do that. Now England has sort of secured that, not secured it by actually qualifying, but, you know, securing it in terms of being in the pole position to actually go on and finish in this top eight and be at this Champions Trophy. And for the Netherlands, if they'd have made that, that's another, you know, I think Dirk Nannis was talking about it on the commentary, you know, that's another tournament that they would have been there. That's more opportunities for sponsorship. It really has much more significance for a side like the Netherlands, who I think Dirk Nannis said, you know, their central contracts in the Netherlands are less than what an England player earns for one test match. So, you know, like the difference in what things can do, what a tournament like that can do for a side like the Netherlands in terms of getting more money and getting more revenue for the players is huge. And I think they'll be upset that they didn't put their best foot forward at times in this game.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And I think for me, probably the other thing that feeds into that batting performance from the Netherlands. So we talked about the run out. That's 10 for them in the tournament. So, yeah, not all of them obviously would go down even in Baldy's category, I don't suppose, as unforced errors. There might be a good bit of fielding in there somewhere. But, yeah, I don't think you can be gifting, you know, a wicket or more per innings to that form of dismissal and be consistent. I also think, you know, they've really, really struggled at the top of the order throughout the course of the tournament. I think, you know, they started reasonably well, didn't they? Vikramjeet Singh at the top of the order against Pakistan, you know, looked really, really, quite dominating. But I think I'm right in saying that their top partnership from an opening perspective throughout the course of this tournament is about 15 or something like that. They've never really got going. I think Max O'Dowd's got about 100 runs for the tournament, top score of 40-odd, I think, in the loss against Afghanistan. So I think you're putting pressure on that that middle order. And that, you know, that's where their performances have come from the likes of De Leeuw, Nidamaru, Scott Edwards, as you know, has put some performances in. But you need your top order, I think, to be standing up and getting you into a position where you're in that sort of 20 over region and you've got 100, 120 on the board and got a little bit of a platform. And so, yeah, I think that's been the issue for the Netherlands throughout the course of this tournament, despite them showing probably quite a lot of chops in the middle order at times throughout the tournament.
Anything else you want to mention, bask in the England glory, before we quickly, I guess, probably touch on New Zealand, Sri Lanka, a big game tonight?
No, the only thing I reflect on from it, Stu, watching the highlights, there was a couple of dismissals that you would have probably enjoyed. You know, I know it's number 11, but, you know, Offie getting a stumping, beating the outside edge. Rashid went through the gate, I think, with the wrong one again, which I think you would have enjoyed. But yeah, aside from that, I don't think it was a super dominant England bowling performance. It was, I would say, it was a clinical bowling performance where they just kept taking wickets throughout the course of that Netherlands reply, and it never really got going for the Netherlands. And that's why in the end it's a pretty comprehensive scorecard when you look at it. But yeah, let's look at the forward predictions. There's still a little bit, I guess, to decide both ends of the table. We've obviously got the qualification for the Champions Trophy, the major talking point. I say that firmly, tongue in cheek. But yeah, big game tonight, New Zealand, Sri Lanka, day-nighter. So we'll see whether or not, as we get a little bit later into the tournament, the dew becomes a factor again. But yeah, what are your thoughts leading into Bengaluru this evening for the Black Caps?
Firstly, I'm just delighted that you mentioned that Rashid and Damone Ali dismissals. I'm sure viewers would have seen the big grin on my face that I did enjoy that Adil Rashid one, especially. Anything through the gate is, even a seamer going through the gate is, it's kind of all just gravy for me. So yeah, absolutely love that. But yeah, the game tonight, very, very nervous, I think, from a New Zealand point of view. I keep hearing all these things about rain around in Bengaluru. Obviously the last game, you know, for New Zealand, we scored 400 and then the rain came. And look, I mean, not taking anything away from Pakistan, they played brilliantly in that game. But, you know, you just don't want DLS to get involved at all in this game. And I think, you know, especially in a game like this where New Zealand, on paper, you look at the way these two sides have performed and you think New Zealand will comfortably win this game, secure their spot in the semi-finals, and it'll all move on nice and easily. But, you know, we've seen New Zealand. The thing is, New Zealand has lost four in a row now. Like, we've played some decent cricket during that time, but we're not getting across the line. And if these wins, this is now a quarter final essentially for us. We've got to win big. Well, we don't have to necessarily win big, but we've got to win and then sort of hope that Pakistan and Afghanistan can't do enough to get past us in the next couple of games. So I guess on the positive side, New Zealand, I heard Kane Williamson say that everyone is fit or fit-ish, he said, which was, I guess, a reflection of how things have gone for New Zealand on the injury side of things. But I think that might see Lachie Ferguson come back into the side. And sort of as much as I thought he wouldn't be such a crucial bowler for us, he hadn't performed as well as you might have liked in the lead up to this tournament, I think that his ability to take wickets through the middle is something we have missed while he's been out. It's made it more challenging for someone like a Mitchell Santner to try and pick up wickets along the way. So yeah, look, I think he'll be important and it'll be nice to have him back. I do think they'll probably try and bowl first if they win the toss, just because of that, the worry about the rain. Yeah, something I saw said 60% chances of thunderstorms and all of that stuff. But yeah, Look, I think they just have to go out and try and win that game. Sri Lanka's been a complete mess during this tournament, but they do have match winners in Madushankar and Kusil Mendes and Nisanka and all of these players. So we're just going to have to do the job and hope that it gets us a step into that semi-finals. But definitely a lot more nerves than I had 2 weeks ago looking at this game and thinking that'll be a nice win for New Zealand.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And I guess, yeah, kind of looking at the fixture list, you don't want to be needing Pakistan to do you a favour. Needing England to do you a favour, sorry, against Pakistan. Because, yeah, that'll be a nervous watch, I would imagine. I guess for me it is that, you know, Sri Lanka probably on form, you know, if we kind of look at their tournament so far, the two games, you know, they've won have been against England, who've been poor, and the Netherlands, who are also down the bottom. So from a form perspective, you know, you'd probably expect to beat them based on their form and your form. But as you said, they've got that quality in the lineup. So, yeah, definitely you've got to be on your wits this evening. And then, yes, we can talk about all the permutations, but I think at this stage of the tournament, we just let it go one game at a time, don't we? Because it'll change overnight depending on run rates and weather and all kinds of factors as we lead in. Anything else from you, Lip, before we wrap up and get off to work here in New Zealand?
No, just those nerves. I'm really hoping New Zealand does the job. I do feel like we could, you know, as a word that you hate, but I feel like they deserve to. I feel like they have been the fourth best side. I think they've played, you know, well enough in this tournament so far. But honestly, look, if rain doesn't intervene and they can't beat Sri Lanka, then I don't, you know, then obviously they won't deserve to be there. So if they put their best foot forward tonight, they'll do the job. And yeah, hopefully we see it. What I'd really like to see is some runs from Devin Conway and really kicking on. I think he's threatened so far. He obviously performed extremely well against England, but has threatened since then, but it hasn't really kicked on. And yeah, I'd love to see a big 100 for him sort of lead us to a victory.
Absolutely. Well, look, we will, of course, be back to wrap up that game. And tomorrow, I'm sure you'll be on the pod in the morning, bleary-eyed and hopefully celebratory in your demeanour, Stu. But for now, it is good morning, a good bless from us all here in Auckland. We'll see you next time on the Top Order Podcast Cricket World Cup Review Show. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.